This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 781, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing their hands, wearing their masks, getting vaccinated, and doing the best they can for other folks. I don't know how long we're going to keep saying this. Probably a while longer.
Walking through a crowd, the village is aglow. Kaleidoscope of loud heartbeats under coats.
Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 781. I'm Josh Flanagan. And this is my co-host, Connor Kilpatrick. We are iFanboy. We are collective, apparently.
We should do this whole show like Grodin.
I don't think I have much else to contribute to that.
That's okay. It's enough. It's enough of a tribute.
We are iFanboy, and every week we read a stack of comics. One of us...
He just really wanted those chorizo and eggs so badly, and he was all in for the description of it. He wanted to know everything about it, and he could afford a tea.
The whole time you were talking, I was trying to decide if it was any point in explaining that joke, if it was just for people. It's not even a joke.
We really talked about it on the Media Explode. Listen, get involved in the whole ecosystem.
This is our awful marketing. Listen, you weren't paying attention a year and a half ago, so why is that our problem? Enjoy the show. We read a stack of comic books, not a physical stack. It's honestly, it's a list of digital items. And one of us picks the one they like the best and call that the pick of the week. We're going to talk about that book. We're going to talk about other books from the week. We're going to talk about the patron pick. Patron pick. We are going to answer some listener mail if we have time. We will give out patron powers. We will probably at some point go, man, we're going way too long. All those things are going to happen. We're going to have a good time. It is your spoiler warning now. Mm-hmm. You've had it. This week, Connor, you had the pick.
I did. And here's the thing. Nightwing number 80 is the pick of the week. 879 was the pick of the week as well. Throughout the history of this show, there have been several books in which there have been several consecutive picks of the week. I know we've had some lately. And I think, you know, we had Hellblazer and we had... Beta Ray Bill. There's been a couple of series where they've been consecutive picks of the week. I think there's two reasons for that. One is there's not a lot of great books out there at the moment. There's not a lot of great books at any given time, really. So, you know, you get a lot of Scalps, you get a lot of Ultimate Spider-Mans, you get a lot of Captain Americas, and, you know, you go back to the history of the show from the beginning, there's like, you know, Queen and Country and Gotham Central. Those books are constantly being picked as pick of the week powers. So, it is what it is. The only difference, I think, now is that there's only two of us instead of three, so the chances of me getting Nightwing is much higher than it would have been of three hosts. I'm just giving you the backstory.
You're justifying.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, people were making fun of it, but the point is, like...
Were the older boys making fun of you? Rubbing your face?
Yeah, they were. They were. Jerks.
What I thought was, are you just all in the tank for this because of what it is? And if so, I can't blame you. You know, like...
It's a great
thing
book
that makes you happy.
And it makes me happy. Look, this probably won't be a long conversation. We just talked about this book, and all the reasons why this is Pick of the Week was why it was Pick of the Week last time. Although there are more elements in this week's issue that I really enjoyed. But, you know, it's going to be the same story. It's Tom Taylor writing a terrific Nightwing and the characters around him, and it's Bruno Redondo, again, who I know drew at least portion of Injustice, but for me has sort of come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And been terrific. And then the Adriano Lucas colors and the dot pitch styling they put over it, and then the, you know, the aping the style of David Aja or Aya, and it's all working. It's all mm-hmm. working really, really well. I mean, this is a complete comic book.
I'm wondering if this was like Booster Gold, if you'd think of the same thing.
There's obviously an emotional element to this.
There's a bias, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You recognize the bias, we go with it. And I'm going to back you up.
I think bias is a harsh word. I think this is just an emotional element. If it's your favorite character done really, really, really well, you're going to like it more than if this was a book about Ambush Bug.
That's literally what a bias is, though.
I don't know if that's... bias is such a negative connotation, though.
It doesn't... No, it's not. It's just that it's tilted in one direction. So the deck was already stacked to a certain... It's not negative. It's you know, you were leaning this way, so it took less force to get you there. And I think that I would agree with you. Like, it's a very good book. I like this book. I think there's a lot... It's one of those ones that the more that we talk about it, the more that... I can see lots of things to like about it. I didn't notice any food problems with this issue, which helped a lot.
I didn't notice either, which was good.
Yep. Do I love it? Would I have made this pick of the week? Probably not. But it's I don't have the same sure. attachment to
and
it.
And that's the wondrousness of the show and the pick.
And this, you know, this isn't even just a thing that happens between you and I. This happens between the readers and us. And as long as we're upfront about it, I think it would be ridiculous if you were like, this is the best book ever.
No, but I think this is my favorite book being published right now. And listen, I was all in for other books to blow me away and be like, no, I'm the pick. And that would have been great. Mm-hmm. There were other books I was hoping that would happen. It didn't happen, though. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me about what it was. What was special about this issue?
Let's start with the art. I love the color. I love the brightness. I love the cover in which, we didn't talk about this before, but the choice to use hot pink as the accent color, and it's even in the logo, is kind of inspired. It's not a color you associate with Nightwing in any way, shape, or form.
It does give you that sense that he's, you know, like out on rooftops at night.
Yeah, it gives you sort of a neon pop sensibility. It's the highlight color on him, but it's also the color on the logo and the company logo. It's an inspired choice because it also pops. You know, there's no other covers colored quite this way. You'd think they'd go for red because the guy's Heartless, that's the villain, but it's pink.
Question, because just so that I have a chance to get to it, is Heartless an existing character we know about?
No, this is a new character.
Okay, that's all.
Yep. So, last month, you know, Nightwing is now a billionaire. He went to go spread the money around amongst the less fortunate people of Bloodhaven, bought a bunch of them pizza. He bought one of them, a father and a son, a hotel room, and on their way to the hotel, they were accosted by Heartless, and Heartless took the father's heart. So now the police are calling on Dick because he was the last person seen, plus the guy had a hotel under his credit card. Then you get the absolutely adorable scene where he calls Barbara, and she says, "Miss me already?" And I just was like, oh, yes, I'm in. And then she gets called back to the apartment. She's only a block away, and they say, "So what is your relationship to Mr. Grayson?" And that leads to the forced conversation about what are they, which I loved.
That was my favorite panel in the whole book, by the way. Was the silent panel after that. What are you two doing each other? And Dick exhales.
Mm-hmm.
that was great.
She's kind of pursing her lips at him, like she's thinking.
Oh, I didn't even... That's true. It's not pursing like disappointed.
I'd also like to point out, which I didn't even notice till now, which should have made this automatic pick of the week, is that Dick Grayson's coffee mug is Adam West holding the bomb.
Wow. If they were like, how can we put Connor over the top here?
Right.
And then I'm guessing. No, I don't know.
Wait, has Tom Taylor talked to you? Did he go to research for what to do for this book?
I'm saying between, like, the team got together and they were like, we got to do this comic book. We got to sell copies. They're like, sure, sure. And then the one guy goes, well, hold on, though. Let's talk about what really is the point. Do you know this guy, Connor? And then one goes, is he the one? Yeah, Scott talked about it. Oh, right. Okay. And... we got to get this guy in the tank. Well, how do we do it? Well, first of all, we do a really good story and we make it about Dick and Barbara and then their relationship is true. But it was the colorist. He goes, hold on. This is going to sound crazy, but I think I know what's going to happen. And what happened was, and they put it in there and they were like, this is a great idea. And they all knew it. They knew it was a home run.
Yep.
And then what happened is they're listening now. Like they're listening to, hey guys, how you doing? Sound of her voice. And disappointment was setting in.
I understand.
Because you hadn't led with that. you hadn't said this pick of the week because he put Adam West holding the bomb on the cup.
I just now saw it. I sent an overwhelmed coworker that GIF just this week at work.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can't get rid of a bomb.
So then the next page, you got a cutout of the building and they're in the elevator. And then Tim Drake shows up, who, you know, to me is Robin right now. I mean, obviously Dick is the best Robin ever. I don't care what anyone says.
Well, yeah, but Tim Drake is the best person to be Robin now.
Yes, absolutely. So I don't care about the other guy. And then I laughed out loud because at the last episode, Dick was pickpocketed by the street toughs. Mm-hmm. And that went out over the Bat family text chain. And so Tim shows up and hands him a wallet with a chain and says it's from Bruce. so that the kids can't steal your money again. And then as added bonus, you confront a soft metal band from the early 2000s. And I literally laughed out loud.
It was a whole page dedicated to the soft burn.
Yes.
It's pretty good.
And then, you know, good. Then you get a nice team up with the brothers of, and he calls him his brother, of Tim and mm-hmm. Dick as they investigate the crime. And, they, you know, Barbara's in the Oracle mode, and Tim wants to talk about Barbara to Dick, and he doesn't realize that Barbara's on the comms with them, and that was funny. And then, you know, they have a little adventure in the thing, and you get terrific work from Bruno Redondo. There's a great panel on page 16 in a digital reader, which Dick's standing on a power line and it's shot from the bottom, which is a great angle. And then, you know, team up fight, and it's a great
shoe.
Book. It's a great book. It's a great superhero book.
Yeah, it's exactly what a Nightwing book should be. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I like is that it feels current, I suppose. Mm-hmm. It feels like these characters have grown to a certain extent so that we're not reading exactly the same thing we did when Chuck Dixon was doing it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I feel like it's
that felt
modern.
Very much of that time.
It's, yes.
Great book. I love those
But it's
books.
The same feeling. It just, you know what I mean? Like it's the illusion of letting the characters develop and mature when they haven't really, but it's done really well, I suppose. It's like they're a year older than they're earlier.
And especially for longtime fans who this character's had a target on his back for years, and they haven't really done a lot of exciting things with him. This has just been a breath of fresh air.
He had a spiral on his face. Is that what you meant?
Yeah, God. I mean, I love Seeley and King, but...
Did you read all of that?
I read all of it. You didn't even need to ask that question.
Well...
I didn't dislike the book. I didn't dislike it, and there was occasionally good issues, and
sure.
The art was good, but I just, as a concept, take his name off of it. It was a good spy book, but like, just it didn't make sense for Dick to do that at all whatsoever. So Nightwing 80 is the pick of the week. 79 was the pick of the week. 78 would have been the pick had I had the pick that week. Look, this is the way it is right now. Someone else step up to the plate and beat it. Well, that's all. I was hoping it was going to be Fantastic Four Life Story number one from Mark Russell and Sean Isaacs.
What we have to do is commit to something and pretend like we know what it means.
Sean Isaacs. I'm going to say Isaacs.
Move along.
Nolan Woodward.
Kind of works.
And Joe Caramagna. Joey Cara. Should we call him Joey Onion? Joey Oranges? Because isn't the Cara orange?
No, he's Joey Donuts.
Joey Donuts. Okay.
Like that's definitely who, that's his mob nickname, Joey Donuts.
So this is the next in the Life Story line. We had the Spider-Man Life Story book last year that Chip Zdarsky did.
I forget.
It's sort of Superman's Secret Identity for Marvel. It's these characters put into a timeline and then they age for real and we follow them through the decade. So this is the 1960s
issue.
That's not
Superman's Secret Identity. Secret Identity is another person.
No, the book Superman's Secret Identity was Superman aged through. It doesn't matter. The point is.
Wasn't the Kurt Busiek one the Superman's Secret Identity No, he was a whole different person. He was
Superman. He became Superman, then he aged throughout the book. Mm. The point is, it's a book in which a character ages throughout their whole lifespan.
Yeah, and we actually follow if their origin was in the 60s like it was in the comic book, same year, so 1961 here.
Right, so this is the 60s, of course, for Fantastic Four, and it's a slightly different Fantastic Four. You know, there's a different relationship with Ben Grimm, and there's a guy who's not Dr. Doom, who's their nemesis. What is his name? Ricardo? Dr. Ricardo
Jones. Dr. Jones.
Dr. Ricardo Jones.
Which was weird.
Yeah.
I was a little ways through it before I realized that this was the same as the other book, or at least the same sort of theme.
Yeah.
And I liked that. That was a fun book, and sort of this could be anything. I thought, have we seen Mark Russell at Marvel before?
I think so. Yeah,
maybe like a one shot. Certainly,
yeah. Didn't he do?
Doesn't matter. I don't know what I was expecting. I really enjoyed it. I don't think it was amazing. I really liked the setup for it. I suppose, you know, how like there was a problem with the space race, you know, and they needed somebody, which is what happened, by the way. 1961, the Mercury program is not going well.
Right.
You know, Kennedy was very close to probably canceling it. So in this world, he would go ahead and bring in this other guy to happen, and it would piss off whoever Dr. Jones is. And then you've got, it was funny, though, is that the way that they launched off was like a midnight raid,
right,
where they found some guy that Johnny knew to fly the thing. And it wasn't like they were like
super expensive experimental craft. Johnny knows this guy.
He's at the bar.
We don't test him. We don't check into it. We just trust Johnny.
I love it. I love it. I love the, also, I'm a big fan of the way that the characters were drawn.
Yes.
1960s Ben Grimm.
Well, look at page 10. Look at those costumes. You can't beat those Fantastic Four costumes. They are perfect.
Yeah, they're pretty great. It was a heck of a lot of fun. It was Mark Russell without being very much Mark Russell, but still very good. I mean, he was there.
Put a gun to my head, I wouldn't tell you this is Mark Russell. I don't need it to be Mark Russell Lee every time. And he's shown he can do degrees of it, but I thought there'd be a little bit more of his sort of pointed stuff. But maybe there doesn't have to be in this story. That's okay.
We don't know. By the way, the Dick Cavett scenes were spectacular.
That was my favorite scene, actually, where they were on Dick Cavett talking about everything.
I mean, he can write a strong Dick Cavett. I don't know how much call there. I don't know where you put that on the resume.
Listen,
but
you put out a Dick Cavett comic book and you have Mark Russell write it, Josh and I will read it.
Yeah, it's going to be golden.
That is a fact.
No one's going to call it a shitty Dick Cavett comic.
You will sell six
copies. They
might
not be interested.
And it will be me and Josh and then Dick Cavett's family.
Well, we get press copies, but still.
I mean, we wouldn't buy them. We'd read them, though.
Oh.
So I liked that when they go into space, Reed basically sees a vision of Galactus. You know, it was scary and it was foreboding. I liked that bit. Death is on the horizon. They're not going to be able to do anything to stop it. And then, you know, the relationship with Ben is much more fraught. You know, the original Kirby Lee stuff, it was like, you know, they changed, which, by the way, is a horrific scene in that original book, if people haven't read it. Like, when they sort of mutate into their powers, it's like really scary. And then they come back to Earth. They basically become superheroes right away. Here, it's like, they come back. Ben's like, fuck all you people. I don't even know you, and now I'm the rock guy. And he leaves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mole Man is the big, you know, the big moment. They're heroes again. So there's like a lead time between that, and then after Mole Man, he bails out again. You know, he just sort of comes and goes into their lives. So that was interesting. And
I just, you know, like, I've read a lot of these origins of these characters, and this was a slightly different but interesting take. You know, like, it, you know, it does what this is supposed to do.
Right.
It's not reinventing the wheel, but it is. It's not reinventing the wheel of reinventing the wheel, if that makes sense.
I'll tell you what Dr. Jones is not good at is pretending to be somebody else.
I'll tell you what Dr. Jones is not good at is looking not evil.
Right. Well, yeah.
It's very clearly like, what are you trusting this guy for, President Kennedy? Look at him.
I understand that having a shaved head could connotate evilness, but I'm just, you know.
It's the glasses plus the shaved head plus the vaguely sinister smile.
The shaved head in the 60s for sure.
Look at this. He's got the smirk on his face, and his face is half in shadow. If you are smiling at somebody with your face half in shadow, you're evil.
I just like that he pretends to be Ben Grimm, and he's like not even trying. He's like, hello, fellow scientists.
I'm Mr. Burns.
When Radiant Black 3 came out, we said specifically on the show, we will not talk about every issue of Radiant Black. That being said, Radiant Black number 4.
Well,
Kyle Higgins and Marcelo Costa. And when I finished reading it, I was like, fuck, we're going to have to talk about it again.
Exactly. And I thought, what's funny, so, all right, I don't want to give it away because I don't think this is a book that 1,000 people are reading, but maybe at the end
of
it,
oh my God. Well, I don't buy it.
We can talk around it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, character dies. Mm-hmm. And it is a fairly surprising thing. Yeah, I think we have to talk about it.
Yes, we have to. There's no way around it. So, spoilers, we gave you the spoiler warning, but this is a like we said, you're probably not reading this. If you're interested at all reading this, skip this discussion because this was a genuine surprise in this book.
I know, imagine that. Yeah, so the main character, or who we thought, the writer guy who we've been talking to the whole time, was killed with some finality at the end of this issue.
And then Styles takes over.
Yeah. And I thought, well, I didn't see that coming. It was starting to come into a very familiar track.
I mean, I'm 50-50 on it.
Okay.
Because, I mean, they did so much to build up this character, and it could have been the classic Swerve.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying he's definitely not dead or not dead.
Oh, I think there's a they're dealing with some unknown cosmic force.
I'm just saying he could easily be not dead. That's all I'm saying. I would respect it either way.
Yeah.
If he's definitely dead, I would respect it 10 times more.
Yeah, but I think that the medium, the genre, demands at some point that the character step back out of the shadows as being alive. I don't know how you do what is at heart like a reinvention, but faithful roots comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And in that scenario, that guy always comes back.
Yeah, I just think it would be super interesting if he didn't. But I think when I finished the book, it's like, wow, I did not see that coming. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily believe it. That was my reaction after finishing reading it.
I didn't think that. I mean, because the fact is, everything I just said, who knows? Because the guy can do anything he wants to. And if you're writing this, which is funny because it's about a writer, you're weighing that. You're going, all right, so what is the thing that is the best story point? Is it to bring him back? Is it not to? Do I just not worry about that right now and eventually it'll come to me? I figured that's probably where we are.
Also interesting is that the reason why this all happens is he is inside. So this guy, we've talked about this book a lot, but in case this is your first episode, this guy, Kyle Higgins, Darkhawk, whoever you want to call him, gets this little miniature like black hole, comes across it one night after drinking with his buddy Styles. It goes into his body and gives him these powers. He gets, you know, the suit appears around him. He's got these powers. And he's been trying to communicate with it in a very Greatest American Hero kind of way that he doesn't understand the suit, doesn't understand the power. So finally, in this issue, he is able to communicate with whoever it is that's given him the powers. And they say, basically, there is a force coming to Earth. Definitely not called Galactus. But it's coming to Earth and it's going to destroy everything unless you're willing to do what needs to be done to stop it. And this dude is basically a good guy. And he's like, I'm not going to kill. And so they're like, okay, see ya. And the power leaves him and goes to Styles because Styles says, yes, I'll kill. I thought that was a really interesting moral situation because we've built up this dude as a good guy, basically. He wouldn't steal money even though he was dead broke. He wouldn't go against his morals. And basically, that's not good enough. And I thought that was interesting because you don't normally get that kind of thing in these comics.
It is. And also from the beginning, the guy wasn't really set up as a sympathetic character. He was kind of a loser. He was kind of, he was self-absorbed being a writer and seeming he was that good at it. I might be projecting. But, I don't know that we had a lot of material. Like, we had to learn, he is actually quite moral, which is a very superhero thing to do. So they sort of worked backwards on it, and then they shot him for it, which is terrible.
Listen, I've enjoyed this book. I don't know why I feel like I need to say it in an apologetic way. It's just been interesting. It's taken some swifts. That's the word.
I don't think about it as apologetic, but I am surprised by it. I mean, it is a thing that's clearly based on Darkhawk, which I don't find all that interesting to begin with. Mm-hmm. By a guy who's a good writer, but isn't really my kind of writer.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning, it was a kind of tired trope, like this is a guy who's a writer who can't make it. It's like none of these things should be interesting, but I am still drawn to the book. And then at the end of this one, they surprised me.
Yep.
It says something. I think that you got to give them a lot of credit for keeping me on my toes because this seems like the book that I would have run away screaming from, and I keep coming back, and I see that it comes out, and I'm like, oh, and now I'm going to be really prepared to be surprised. Maybe it's bad now. I don't know. Like, oh, it's just a regular issue, but it's cool. I like that. I'm surprised, and that makes it fun.
Yeah, I liked it. Again, similar to Radiant Black, we just keep coming back to the scumbag, number 8, Rick Remender, and the art this time by Alex Rigel, who I didn't love as much as the other artists have been on the book. I didn't really like it as much, but I find myself liking the book and the character more with every issue.
You're not wrong. I think at first you were, the first issue or two, you're like, what is this? How is this? And it's that whole setup thing.
Very one note joke.
Yeah. Now as we get going, Remender has this is a Remender book that I'm really interested in.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really flimsy, dumb premise that he had legs for.
Yeah.
And it's funny. And it's not unlike Transmetropolitan. In a way.
Yeah, in the way of the main character is someone you wouldn't want to spend time with in real life. And it's kind of annoying and an asshole, but ultimately does the right thing and isn't necessarily wrong. Like, this guy's a little bit more wrong than Spider Jerusalem was. But we actually get some layering here.
Yeah.
First of all, we find out that his hot hippie girlfriend is a robot. So that was devastating for him. and they still didn't get to have sex. I just love that as a running joke. He keeps getting so close.
I really thought, because at the beginning I thought, oh, this time he is going to have sex. Nope. Because you had pointed it out. I hadn't noticed it.
He's naked. She's naked. They're in the bed. It's about to happen. Red alert. That's a funny recurring joke. And then we find out a little bit about him. And it's not unusual. I'm not groundbreaking his childhood. He had a horrible dad and he had a mom that didn't care. And there was, you know, a lot of booze and drugs in the house. And there was one really terrible bit where he said the dad and his friends gave him heroin to laugh at the results. And that was really, fuck. You know, we learn a little bit more about him. And he's slightly more sympathetic.
It's interesting to see, like, there's a couple of ways they could have gone with the origin. Mm-hmm. Like, it could have been, you know, grew up in the suburbs and his dad drove a BMW. And, right. You know, like, there's all sorts of things they could do. And I think the thing that was most obvious here is the thing that kind of worked.
Yeah.
You know, and then you learn more about the lady, sister Mary. And I don't know, man, it's treading a line.
It is.
It's treading a line really well that is not falling into sentiment or cliche. And he said at the beginning, this is not a respectable character. He's not going to be redeemed. And so you keep watching and you expect it because that's what happens in stories. And so, like, he leans you towards it and then leans you away. But they've given you a reason for him having to do the right thing, and it's because he wants to have sex. You know,
just someone. Let him have sex.
It's and he can. And then, you know, like the end, the sort of last three pages, what happens, you know, is great.
Talk about Radiant Black and you really want to read the next issue. I'm very excited to read Scumbag 9. The whole plot here was that the super hippies on the moon who are like caricatures of super woke people are going to blast this ray at Earth and make everyone like them. And no one will ever be offended ever again. And instead of that happening, the scumbag falls into the juice. That now everyone on Earth is going to be like him. Planet Ernie, who was the scumbag.
And it got me. I was like, well, hell yeah. I was ready for the next one immediately. This book gets better every time I read it. And I really like that. And it's the Remender that I have been wanting to read for a little while. It's
Remender Unleashed.
And it's silly. Yeah, but he gets to be funny. And some of the books...
He's been really a little pissed off since the show got canceled, and he's sort of letting that out on the page, which has been good.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
I will take it.
The Flash 770, this is sort of a detour slightly into War Corner, which is a place we haven't been in a while.
Well,
even though we have, we just haven't called it out because we forgot about our own bit, which will happen.
There's a lot of bits.
You don't have a producer. You're on your own. This is the story of Wally West being bounced around time. He went back to the Dinosaur Age. He went to the future and was in Impulse's body. Did you read this?
I think I read the first one, but I didn't read. I think I forgot to keep reading it.
So in this issue, he shows up in Jay Garrick's body during the war, and has a fun little adventure with the Golden Age Ray character, who are on a special mission to go behind Nazi lines. This is very similar in overall plot to the JSA cartoon we just talked about. The Nazis are trying to find mystical artifacts, which is something that Hitler really did, and here they find the Spear of Destiny. And the Flash and the Ray fail in their mission to keep the Destiny Spear out of the hands of the Nazis. The Nazis get it. It goes to Hitler, who becomes superpowered. And that's when Wally shows up in the body. It's like, oh, fuck, Hitler's got superpowers. Shit. And so then they have an adventure to save the day. And that's what they do. And then at the end of the issue, because every issue ends on a cliffhanger in which he jumps to a new body, kind of like Quantum Leap. And the artist for the next issue draws it. And in this issue, he jumps into the Reverse Flash at a meeting of the Injustice Society, drawn by Kevin Maguire, looking a lot like the cartoon Super Friends. It's like that era. Purple tunic Lex Luthor and Riddler and Solomon Grundy and Scarecrow. So looking forward to that issue. This is a fun book.
Is this the third issue since the relaunch?
Yes.
Or the second?
Third.
Okay.
First issue was Dinosaur. Second issue was Impulse. Third issue was Jay Garrick.
Okay. So you've enjoyed this.
Yeah. It's not great, but it's been fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I'm not loving it.
That's fine.
But
yeah,
but every issue's been enjoyable. And like, oh, that was a fun little romp. This issue is probably the best one of the three.
So normally at this point in the show, what I would do is say, if you want to support the show, you go to patreon.com/ifanboy. But, you know, after the show we've done so far, I don't know that I can, can in good conscience tell you to go over there.
Oh, boy.
Unless you like the bit about the Batman mug. I mean, that's what you're going to get.
Yeah, more of that. More Batman mug.
We love that shit. Mm-hmm. So I just have to hope and have faith in the fact that you guys who are still along with us now are like, oh, there he goes in that Batman mug stuff. That's great.
Let me give them an incentive to become patrons.
Okay.
So This past weekend, we had a patron hangout, which is our monthly hangout with the patrons. Last year, we did it for everybody during the super lockdown, but now that we've used that, we made it patrons only again. So you get an hour hangout with me, Josh, and Ron, but you get a two-hour pre-hangout happy hour with me and special guests. This week, none of the special guests could make it except for Gordon for half an hour. So I was alone.
You held court.
Which means I drank way more because I got nothing else to do. And I just did Q&A with the chat room, which was super fun. And they got me to go on a drunken rant about the state of the Batman comics. And that's the only kind of content you're going to get if you're a patron, is to see me go on a drunken Batman rant about the state of the world in Batman comics and how upset I am about it. I'm not going to tell you what I said. You have to become a patron. You can go watch. You can become a patron and watch the old videos. They're all archived on the site. Huh. But that's the kind of thing you get as a patron. I mean, it was a drunken rant.
You got me wanting to get involved in that action.
I was trying not to go off on it, and then I went off on it.
I mean, they're just baiting you. So get over to patreon.com/ifanboy if you like this. The deal is, hey, I like this thing that they're doing. I should support them because, you know, you should support the content that you really appreciate. Not just us, anybody, but it really helps when people support our stuff. So you can, the way that this works is they've unlocked all sorts of stuff. Patron pick, the talks blows, the books blows, the media blows, the YouTube content, the patron powers, all of the stuff that have become very normal things in the iFanboy world is literally because of the patrons coming and sticking around too. Just sticking with it. Which is a feature of the patron pick, which is ironic. Mm-hmm. Just going to be a patron? Yeah. How many stars did you give it? 4. You sticking with it?
Maybe.
There's other stretch goals. We'll figure out what those are going to be. There's also the patron Facebook group, patron Discord server. So if you want to have that old community feeling back, those are really good places for it. You can go to ifanboy.threadless.com. There are 8 designs there now. We should have others at some point soon. I broke my phone case today. Uh-oh. So I need a new one. You know, my phone case was the Snake Eyes Alone cover.
Right, yeah.
And it's my favorite phone case I've ever had. G.I. Joe 21. Yeah. Well, I dropped my phone several times yesterday, and that was it.
Just kept dropping it.
So maybe I'll get one of ours. Maybe I'll get a GDAT phone case.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, it's good stuff. You can go to ifanboy.com/support. You can find a PayPal link there if you don't want to deal with any of that stuff. If you want to get something from Amazon, or you want to get one of the books that we talk about in the Booksplode or whatever, we would very much appreciate it. If you went to ifanboy.com/Amazon, you'll find a link there. Mm-hmm. I think I'm done with that part of
you're
the
done.
Show.
Okay, great.
I think we're all better off for it.
Did you read Wonder Girl number 1?
No.
Okay. Joelle Jones, Jordi Belair, Joelle Jones on art and story, Jordi Belair on colors, Clayton Cowles. I don't know what to think about it. Her Infinite, was it Frontier? Whatever that was. Miniseries was okay. We both read it. Remember it was like the Cerberus. She went to hell.
Kinda.
Left no memory. That's fine.
I kind of remember because I read it at the last second before. Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're dealing with here. Like, it looks really good. Joelle Jones is an incredible artist. It's interesting. She's Brazilian. She's coming home to Brazil, the place she didn't really grow up, and ends up running into a situation there. There was some fun character interactions with her on like the tour bus, but ultimately it was kind of confusing what was happening and kind of all over the place. And I'm going to give it a couple issues solely for the strength of Joelle Jones' art, but I didn't love it. I was hoping to love this too, but also didn't love it. So
it's enough. Mm-hmm. I bet it looked good.
It looked great. Beautiful.
Runaways number 36. Well, I'm still going to bring this up when I can because I really enjoy it. It's another one of those ones that when it comes up, go, oh.
It's your semi-annual Runaways discussion.
Yeah. Rainbow Roll still on it with Andre Genelay. Chris Anka still doing covers. And so much of this issue was two people having a conversation. The first bit is basically, so Chase is dating Gert. She gets left behind in time. Then she returns to them, but he's like 21 and she's like 16, which would have been fine in the 70s, but isn't okay now. And it shouldn't be. Just in case you're taking my flippancy to be, it isn't. Yeah. So he's like, well, I'm going to finally go talk to this girl at the Hallmark, it's called. So Chase, by the way, definitely has a body type he's into. And I'm totally cool with that. Mm-hmm. And then he talks to her, and he's very happy, and he comes back, and then Gert is back, but it's future Gert who has aged herself to the same point where he is now, and he's like, oh, man, what do I do? And so they talk for a really long time. But at the same time, present Gert, who is 16, has been going to school, and she has a huge conversation with Victor, who's the Ultron robot boy. Mm-hmm. The whole thing is this conversation. And I didn't even notice till it was over because it was incredibly compelling character stuff.
That's good.
It was great. And it was sort of time travel, Mishigas. And then young Gert comes in and finds old Gert making out with Chase. And it's like, oh, and they see each other. And then then she's with Victor. So it's a whole love quadrangle.
Well, that is a total love triangle when it's you and yourself.
Yeah.
Daredevil 30, Chip Zdarsky, Marco Cecchetto, and Mike Hawthorne, as it's been for a while, as Marco Cecchetto draws the Electra bits and Mike Hawthorne draws the other bits. And I still like this book. Even though Matt's being like a total Matt, being a martyr. They're trying to get him out of prison. Even the cops who arrested him were like, hey, do this thing and you'll get out of prison. He's like, no, I'm going to stay in prison and brood. I like the Electra bits a lot. That's what I like.
Yeah, I kind of, I don't know, like, it's not bad. It's good. It's all the things that I've liked about it so far. The writing is strong. I want this part over, though. I feel like, you know, we've done...
This is the reverberations of the first issue of this book. So this is 30 issues mm-hmm. of this, basically the story of Matt's guilt about accidentally killing
It's not
that
even
dude.
That. It's not even that. It's the prison thing. I think it's dumb. Mm-hmm. That you get tried as a superhero and then he's in there with his mask on and he's in the hospital bed and I'm just...
He should at least be in superhero prison, like the Wrath or something.
Something. It's just...
That mask probably smells real bad.
I just want it over with. I do like the Elektra as Daredevil part and watching her sort of come to terms with whatever it is. And this is... It's a scary Bullseye who's coming back, you know. But really, you know, 40-ish years later, we got Matt Murdock, Elektra, Bullseye, and Kingpin.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, no. That's comics, though.
They got it. No, I know. I don't know. Art's great. Story, you know, like, that's not my favorite story, but it's good. You know, I like the characters. I like the cop guy, Cole. Yeah. The hand's coming back.
I really enjoyed Kingpin working out with his trainer. And Kingpin's, like, super upbeat right now because his son's back alive.
Yeah, well, totally was.
He's got also great stuff going on. And... I think he thinks he's complimenting the trainer. Kingpin's a super rich, super powerful guy, and, you know, the trainer's not. And he's like, you must be as happy as I am being a trainer because you found your... And you can see the guy's face. He's not happy about it.
Yeah.
And I thought that was funny because he's totally oblivious to this dude.
I agree with you on that front. And then later when everything goes bad, that dude takes the hell off.
Well, yeah,
like, he's
I
not...
I'm paid enough for this.
That's good stuff.
Shang-Chi number one, which is the third number one of Shang-Chi book in the last... 6 months?
Yeah.
We had the miniseries.
Was the movie
then we had
supposed
the one
to
shot.
Come out already? Or was it like, I don't, was it delayed? Like, I'm were sure. all these comics
everything
supposed
was,
to come out?
Everything yeah, was delayed.
Yeah. Well, like, was it done?
Probably.
Okay.
So, well, there's a lot of post-production on that. Anyway, so the first one we had was a miniseries. Then we had a one shot. And now we have what I suppose is another, well, I don't know. This is Marvel. We won't know until the next issue if it's a miniseries or not. But Gene Luen Yang is the writer, as he's been on all these. And D.K. Rowan was the artist. I think he was the artist on the regular book as well.
I believe, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
The title of this story, not the book, is Shang-Chi vs. the Marvel Universe. And it looks like every issue he's going to team up with somebody who he might run into in the movies. So in this one, he teams up with Spider-Man. The next issue is Captain America. But I thought this was fun. I didn't love it, but I did really enjoy it. I thought he and Spider-Man had a fun dynamic because they have somewhat of a history.
Yeah, I thought that was the fun part of it that connects it. But it was a little... I found it a little annoying. It was like, stop talking about it. It's fine. Don't. And I was like, come on. You're the head of the giant martial arts crime syndicate. You know, just come out with it.
Marvel's into really badass young girl characters.
She was annoying.
There was also one in Daredevil as well.
Yeah. No, I know. But it wasn't badass. It was just annoying. It was,
kill you.
Yeah. That's I like better. The one in the, I think there's one in the Iron Fist book.
Yes. Yes. The Larry Hama book.
Yeah, the Larry Hama book. I like her. That one's fun. I like Dinosaur Girl. I don't like this one.
Marvel likes it.
I like Teen Lantern for some reason. So maybe if you're annoying but you have like a Spanish diction, then it's okay.
I thought this was a fun... This wasn't great. I thought it was fun. Mm-hmm. The art was good. I actually think he draws Spider-Man the best of all these characters. Mm-hmm.
It's the longest that I have ever read a run of Shang-Chi issues.
One issue?
I can tell you that. No, but like, you know, like if you take out their stupid renumbering, mm-hmm. you know, where six or seven issues in or something.
Right.
You know,
I think I would love for them to make Shang-Chi really compelling. I'm not saying he's not. I just never read a lot of Shang-Chi comics in the 70s. So,
I mean, I would be surprised if he was any. I think I could talk to Yang about this. I don't think he was a super interesting character. So
yeah.
They sort of have a, got a blank, you know, slate. Yeah, exactly.
So let's do something with it. I'm hopefully they can. So those are the books we're going to talk about. But if you're a patron over at patreon.com/ifanboy, as we talked about earlier, you can vote to add a book to the rundown. Every patron can do so. This week, the overwhelming favorite was Red Room, number one, from Fantagraphics by Ed Piskor. Ed Piskor did everything in the book.
That's his thing.
This is a series that he started on his Patreon, and then Fantagraphics collected it.
It's a 62-page story.
One, this is the first issue. It's exercised. It's an exercised complete story, which you can just read this one, or you can continue on the series.
Yeah, it wasn't clear if there was more.
I don't think there is more or not. I think there is, but I don't know. Actually, I don't know. Don't listen to what I'm saying.
So what I thought was interesting is that I didn't know what this was, other than like the cover sort of suggested old time gory horror comics, mm-hmm. you know, sensational.
Yeah.
And it's very much like, it looks like a Mad magazine.
And his art style does recall that, just in general.
Like, yep.
His art style feels very old school.
I didn't think that I would like it,
mm-hmm.
but I did kind of like it. if that follows. Because for a very long time, I didn't know what the hell was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I felt like I had missed something. But it did pull it together in such a way that by the end, you know, and at the end, it reached this a stasis, basically. You know, like it came to a point, and I was like, oh, I've had the whole experience. I know. I didn't feel lost. At the beginning, I was incredibly lost.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It takes a long time for you, like, what the fuck is going on? Who are all these people? Yes. Who are these people talking off camera? They all have similar names. You're a big Hip Hop Family Tree fan, right?
I am. I like that a lot. But, you know, yeah. That said, part of that is the history bit of it. I really just like learning about that stuff. Obviously, he's a super talented cartoonist. But when he went through and he did the X-Men and the Fantastic Four.
Grand no, he did X-Men. Books. Fantastic Four or somebody else.
Oh, no shit.
It was Tom Scioli, I think, did Fantastic Four.
Oh, okay.
I saw a cover for Hip Hop Family Tree at the Smithsonian when I was in Washington, D.C. 5 years ago.
I mean,
ago.
He really hit on something there.
Yeah, he won an Eisner for it. I'm of two minds of this book. So this this book... It's called Red Room Number One, and it's about Red Rooms, which are these basically live streaming snuff rooms on the dark web. And so we experience many of these live streaming snuff rooms, and it's basically like slasher porn. What is it called? There's a term
snuff
for
films,
it.
Snuff films. I mean, you kind of.
It's like the Saw movies. What are those? You know, there's a term for them. There's a genre term.
I don't know. It's my least favorite thing.
You walked out of Saw.
I did. No, I didn't.
I thought you did.
I sat
you told
through
me you
it, but. No, because I went with a bunch of people.
Torture porn. Torture porn is what it is.
Okay, there you go, yeah.
So it's all, you know, there's a lot of reveling in what is happening to these people in these rooms. And so, honestly, this book made me a little nauseous at times.
Yeah.
And I'm not a squeamish person, and I'm not someone who, but just, it's just a little bit, like 10, like 5%, 10%.
I think that it's an interesting balance, because on the one hand, clearly there's an idea that everybody in the book knows that this is wrong, you know, but they're doing it.
I don't know.
Like, no, I don't mean everybody. I mean, like, the point of view of the book is that it's wrong. And when you look at, they show stuff from the rooms, and the comments on the side are the same kind of awful comments that you would see, you know, on message boards or on like 4chan or something like that. So, right. You know, the people who are into it are the bad guys, and the people who are doing it are the bad guys. And so the book is making that position clear.
Well, everyone, the cops are pretty awful. The only person in this book who's not awful is the daughter of the guy that we'll talk about in a second.
But at the same time, this is still what the book is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we're watching a critique of the kind of people who would like a thing like this while watching what is this thing.
It's not like anyone gets a comeuppance at the end. It's not like the bad guys lose.
They become
very wealthy, and it was hard.
Kind of a happy ending. Yeah.
By the end of this, I liked it more than I did about a quarter of the way, half of the way through it. I will say that. I was like, I don't even know if I can finish this book. And then by the end of it, I thought, well, he is very good at making comics. The story did come together, even if in a really awful way at the end. And I respected that. But, God, it didn't make me feel good reading it.
No. I think, yeah, you have to really separate yourself from what it is and sort of look at... I mean, the craft won me over. Like, it's very good draftsmanship. It's very good. Like, the story came together as a thing and just sort of one of those weird reverse morality tales.
And it goes... Like, there's a swerve that's just over halfway unexpected. Through and you think it's going one way and it's actually going another way. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, you got me there.
And you know, it's a very specific tone. And I think he hit all those notes really well. It's consistent. It is what it is. I think the intention was fulfilled.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's not my thing, but I was impressed by it regardless. Hmm. How's that?
Yeah. I'm glad,
tell you what this. Are you glad you had to read it?
No.
No?
No.
I think I am. I think there's no way I would have read this. And as a sort of exercise... In the kind of thing.
Okay, so this is the first issue of a 12 issue story.
Yeah.
I'm not mad I read it, and there were things of value I took out of the experience. Overall, had I wished it had been another book picked? Yes.
Uh-huh.
Like, I literally felt nauseous for about an hour after reading it, and then it went away.
I mean, this is a useless term, but I think it was interesting. I mean, I had to think about it. I had to work at it in a way. Well, what do I think about this? Like, where do I stand? And I'm still not quite sure. And there's value in that.
Mm-hmm.
In a way. I'm honestly, it sounds like I'm being, like, I'm hedging and I'm being wishy-washy.
No,
I'm trying to work my way through it.
You're not hedging nearly as much as I thought you were going to.
Yeah. I mean, he's a good cartoonist. That gets you a long way.
He's an Eisner-winning, you know, in some ways legendary indie cartoonist.
Yep. And a fan of the medium.
He's old school in a way that he would have fit in with Crumb in the 70s. You know right. what I mean? He is that type of comic.
Well, I mean...
Picar. He drew American Splendor, you know, like he's exactly. that kind of guy. Who then did a really funny, awesome X-Men book. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I respect him as a creator. I just would never want to read this anymore. It's not my thing.
Yeah, no, I'm not reading it.
So it's neither one of us are sticking with it. Ratings. Out of 5.
This is tough.
Yeah, I mean, I have to...
I'm hovering at 3. And it's a soft 3. I don't like this at all, but it was really well done.
Yeah, that's the tough part.
Does that make sense?
I want to give it a 1. I want to.
I mean, that's your prerogative. That's
but I respect that it was well made and well drawn, and the story went in an interesting direction, even if it made me kind of sick reading it. So, I honestly don't know what to do. I don't know what to do.
Do you want to think about it and come back?
Think about it, and then you forget to come back. It's probably the best solution. But
give it a number right now.
2.
Give me the gut.
2. I have to.
There we go.
I didn't feel good reading it. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Every patron can get a book to the rundown, but if you give it the $5 R level, you get a superpower live on the show. Like these guys, like Tony Capo. Tony Capo should have been.
Hey.
He should have wrote in and been a patron of our Goodfellas Minute show. Because we could have done a good 10 minutes on that.
Sure.
Tony Capo's power is that not only are any of his shoes instantly broken in perfectly, which I believe is a power already given out, but he can also break anyone's shoes in instantly to a perfect size. Like, oh man, I love these shoes, but they're just slightly too small. Tony Capo's your man. Zap. And the shoe is perfectly fit for your feet.
Let me ask you this. Have you gotten some new shoes recently?
We've been in captivity for a year. Some of us are going out to dinner this weekend in a restaurant.
Oh my goodness.
And we're going to go get all dolled up. We're going all out to the nines. And I put on my shoes that last worn at Ron's wedding. At Ron's wedding gave me an entire foot length blister from the top of my toe to the heel because they were so tight. And I thought, well, let me stretch these out. I got a shoe stretcher and I'll wear them a little bit every day leading up to this thing. It made no difference. These things will not budge. Tony Capo, please come over.
And you're not the kind of gent who'd be like, yeah, I'm putting on the suit, but I'm wearing my Chuckies. That's not going to be a thing for you.
I could see a scenario where I would do that, but not normally. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like there's a scenario I would do that.
Okay.
No. So I'm going to have to go to my second. Anyway, we don't need to get into my dress shoes, but the point is, yes.
If you want, I'm ready to start talking about shoes.
This was inspired by, literally, I took the shoes off and both of these outsides of my feet were bright red. Like, yeah, that's, I was like, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't go out like that. So anyway, that's
it's not going to make it more fun.
Yeah. He can just zap them and they're good.
Okay. Fernando Carrion.
Mm-hmm.
You remember the film Wag the Dog?
Oh, of course I do.
Well, Fernando Carrion is a real-time fad king.
Oh, Dennis Leary.
He recognizes fads. Mm-hmm. He calls fads. He can tell what's going to be a fad. He can suggest the way to do something so that it will become a fad. He's an expert in fads.
He's ahead of the curve.
King.
He's a fad king.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's riding around in the truck with a dog. That was Willie Nelson, not the fad king, but still.
Yeah. Oh, man, I want to watch that movie again right now.
I watched it recently. It's streaming somewhere, and it's fantastic.
Oh, I saw that in the theaters, and I was one of five people in the theater for that.
I remember specifically one night in my 20s being in Los Angeles, and I decided I really need to see the movie, and I drove to many stores trying to find the DVD, and I was not able to do so. And this was before streaming. I could have just rented it, you know.
Sure. Everyone in that movie is perfect.
Yeah.
Thomas Allen... You're also perfect, Thomas. Thomas Allen, this is heavy. This is heavy.
What is it about the future? Is everything...
Thomas Allen knows the secret to the universe. However, it's so emotionally impactful, he cannot bring himself to tell anyone what the secret is.
Good God.
It's so overwhelming. He can't verbalize it. But he knows.
Didn't that just happen in a comic book?
Did it?
Yeah, there's one of the comics is that somebody like saw how they end and now they can't talk about it. Is it?
Maybe. Oh, Thor.
I think that's it.
Thor. That happened in a Thor comic.
Yeah.
So anyway, Thomas knows what the secret of the universe is. We all want to know why are we here? What's the deal? What's the secret? He knows. He's so overwhelmed by knowing he cannot say it.
I don't blame him.
It's a burden.
I think that's fair. Okay, so next up we got Peter Vaith.
Mm-hmm.
His pheromone teeth.
Pheromone teeth.
Teeth emit pheromones that he can use to influence the actions and behavior of others. Pheromone
like
teeth.
Like pheromones, just that they just come from his teeth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can he control them?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I got to really charm this situation. I'm going to release more pheromones?
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Patreon.com/iFanboy Peter, Thomas, Fernando, and Tony. Thanks for being patrons. Chris P. wrote in, and the subject line of his email was, Pick of the Week 780, formal complaint.
Oh, boy.
Here we go. Chris P. says, Good day to members of the iFanboy Syndicate. Upon listening to the iFanboy podcast that you referred to as Pick of the Week 780, I was appalled that your, quote, hosts... did not know that Gary Frank is in other non-superhero comics. It is their duty to be a wealth of knowledge and to know everything at a moment's notice. The fact that these hosts did not know that Gary Frank was the artist on Top Cow's Midnight Nation, written by J. Michael Straczynski, is... Never mind. I can now understand why. They may have removed this from their memories. My apologies. Forget that I sent this complaint in. As for your hosts, they are fine gents. Good day.
Good day, sir.
I did forget about Midnight Nation.
I did. It's completely disappeared. Well, there's the question. Did Straczynski finish that?
I believe he did.
Because I'll tell you what he has a habit of forgetting is to finish series that he started. So the fact that he finished it is a complete outlier.
I loved Midnight Nation at the time. I remember that being as one of those early 2000s books amongst many early 2000s books that really expanded my horizons about comics and what they could be. I definitely remember that. That was like one of those exciting like non-Marvel DC books that we all came across at that time period. We're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
This book's incredible.
That would have been the first time that I saw Gary Frank. And
yes,
I was
for
not
sure. For sure.
Anti-JMS.
No, not at all.
Point.
No, not at all.
I was into it. I didn't get the book. I don't remember anything about it.
I remember it was basically, this was 20 plus years, 20 years ago.
Sure.
But I think it was very similar to the show Heroes.
That's what Rising Stars was.
Oh, that's what Rising Stars was. You're right. Sorry. That was the other J.S.R. exclusive book.
That's the one I was into and reading.
Midnight Nation was 12 issues.
Yep.
Came out over 2 years. It's not terrible.
For Gary Frank. I
mean. Gary Frank drew all of them. And there was some sort of religious thing. I don't remember. I don't even know. I'm trying
doesn't
to
make a log line. For listeners who I think I would say that Straczynski is the only, pretty much the only, I don't know if he's a working comic book, the current comic book creator who I just don't like. And I say I don't like his work. I don't like the stuff.
Right.
And so it does make sense that I would forget. And I think even in retrospect, I don't like the stuff.
Yeah, I remember really enjoying it. I remember really loving the Gary Frank art.
Yeah.
The Wikipedia entry says it's a religious-themed 12-issue series about a man who was killed and is on a journey to save his soul. I don't really remember much about that. I remember there was...
Hey, like, look, it's heavy-handed.
Angels and
check
shit.
Check that out.
I think he was walking. This was like an early look at walking Superman.
I think he was walking.
Yeah. Sorry, Chris. Dallas wrote in and said, I'm writing in because it's become clear through listening to the podcast that all three of you, he means Ron, love New York City. We'll get to that in a second. My wife and I will be moving from Utah to Manhattan at the end of the month, May, to start new jobs and a new chapter of our lives. My question is, what are the quintessential New York movies that we should watch to help prepare us for the big move? Now, I think, first of all, it's funny that a guy named Dallas has moved to New York. I think he meant this for the media explode. He didn't put that in the subject line, so it was missed for the media explode. So this is a lesson for all of you in listener land. If you want our email for the media explode, put it in the title of the email.
Maybe he thought that would take too long.
Listen, we're pulling it together last second. I'm off in 10 cocktails in. You got to put it in the subject line. But I didn't want to leave him hanging because he is moving this month. So even though this is probably meant for our media explode show and it's about movies and not comics, I still feel like we should answer it because he's moving. I don't want to leave our listener Dallas hanging. Utah to Manhattan is going to be quite a culture change.
Yeah, I know. And your name is Dallas. So it's a lot of stuff going on there.
Let's return to the original point. All three of you love New York City. I was born and raised there. Ron was born and raised in Long Island. Josh was born in Long Island, grew up in Maine, but lived in New York City. Josh lived in Queens. Ron lived in Queens. I lived all over New York. We've all lived there. I love it. It's my hometown. Ron loves it. Not say Josh loves New York City, though. I think you probably like that you lived there, but are happy you no longer live there.
No, I liked that I lived there. I liked having done it. I love being there. It's like nowhere else on earth in so many ways. I don't think I want to live there again, unless for some reason, like I was an extremely rich person. And he says specifically he's moving to Manhattan. So Right. Either you're about to be overwhelmed or you did get a great job. One of those two things has happened.
Well, as he says, my wife and I are moving to start new jobs.
Yeah.
They've both got jobs in New York. And
but again, that rom-com could go any direction.
Sure. And this is also the time to do it because the rents, like everywhere else in the country, we're not talking like 1980s levels, but they went down in New York. So this would be the time to move to New York.
So the question is, what movies, and all the things that came to my mind immediately were things about what a shithole it was in the 70s.
I had the same joke. So Mean Streets, Taxi Driver, The French Connection.
Serpico.
Yeah, make sure you show your wife all those movies and say, aren't you excited?
You know what is a fantastic New York City movie?
What?
The original Taking of Pelham 1-2-3.
It is a great, great movie.
It's a great movie about
Robert Shaw. Uh-huh. Walter Matthau,
yep.
Great movie.
So
watch the whole 70s, and then you'll appreciate that. That's not how it is, yet that's how it was when I grew up. You know, there's all kinds of great movies set in New York. And the thing about New York is it's such a wide and varied place that there's different types of New York experiences. Also, caveat, I have not lived there in a decade.
Yeah, I was about to say.
I have no idea what New York is like now, other than the few times I come visit my family and holidays. And I don't really usually leave my mom's immediate neighborhood unless it's good to go see Ron. So these could all be totally wrong. But You've Got Mail is a great movie about a very specific New York life, which most people don't live. Maybe you will be Upper West Side, wealthy. Not everyone's experience, but it does give you a good New York feeling.
So then the opposite side of that would be Do the Right Thing.
That'd be very opposite experience of.
It's almost completely opposite.
Yeah, but You've Got Mail was based on something that happened to my neighborhood when I was a kid, where Barnes & Noble's moved in and it put the local kids' bookstore out of business. That was the thing that really happened. It's a remake of a film called The Shop Around the Corner. But the actual plot is based on something that happened to the neighborhood. Also shot one scene is shot across the street from where I grew up. Also, When Harry Met Sally, similar kind of thing. It's not a New York that really exists anymore, as far as I'm aware, but it's a really kind of great New York movie, too.
This is a stretch, but I do tend to think, like, and it was not shot in New York, but I always think Seinfeld is an extremely New York City show. I mean, it takes place there or whatever, but there is some sort of, there is a sense about it.
Yeah, for sure.
That is a show that has more meaning to me, having like lived in the city and spent a lot of time there.
Overlooked everyone driving cars everywhere, which is a very LA.
There's a lot. I mean, the lighting is all wrong, but
yeah.
You know, it's much cleaner. But just sort of the randomness of everything that could be going around you at all times. There's something to that, and the sort of,
Goodfellas.
Everything I think of is old. I'm trying to think of like what the new New York experience is.
And I don't know. Like I said, I came to the realization this past week. I've been gone for a quarter of my life.
Well, I think we were pretty clear that Manhattan was changing greatly.
Oh, I grew up in Manhattan. I was born and raised there. I lived there for the first 13 years of my life. It's not,
yeah.
That's not the same way it is. Big, that's another one. But again, that's a very different New York.
I think we might need help on this.
Newsies, very different New York. Gangs in New York.
Orange, Mulberry, Little Water, two others.
Let's see. I'm looking up 20 best movies set in New York to stream right now. So here we go. Do the Right Thing, When Harry Met Sally, On the Town, Serendipity, The French Connection, West Side Story, You've Got Mail, Mean Streets. We've named a lot of these.
Tell you what.
Yeah.
Uncut Gems. Uncut Gems is the most stressful movie I've ever seen. But that is the kind of thing that I think is always happening behind every mysterious door in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
And there's unlimited mysterious doors in New York City.
Oh, sure.
There's always going to be some shady shit going on behind there. American Gangster.
Moonstruck was very good
at
capturing that specific area of Brooklyn in that specific time. Again, this is 25 years too late.
This is A Bronx Tale is a great New York City movie. This sort of takes place in different parts of the city.
Oh, I got one. This came out.
Are you going to say Crocodile Dundee?
No, but this movie came out right a few years before I left. So it sort of captures New York at the time I was living there towards the end, which was New York, I Love You, which is an anthology film series. They've done New York, Love You, they've done Paris, they've done Berlin. And it's all short stories taking place in New York City with big name actors, Ethan Hawke, Andy Garcia, Natalie Portman, Orlando Bloom, Christina Ricci, Robin Wright, Chris Cooper, like James Caan, like big people doing short stories all around New York, different parts of New York, different scenarios. It's actually a good overview.
I got to say, I think there's a lot of value in watching sort of what New York City was, because a lot of that's gone now. But understanding that makes the city more interesting because it can feel a little... feels very different than it used to, but to sort of know that that's part of it. 25th Hour is a great New York City movie. Also Spike Lee.
Superman the movie. It's Metropolis, but it's really New York.
It's true.
You should tell everyone they've got a bad outfit at all times in New York. That's what people don't tell you until you live there for a while.
Well, if your name's Jim.
I hope you have some ideas here, Dallas. We've named about
Muppets
45,
Manhattan,
45 movies, most of them shot in the 70s. So not really relevant to your interests. But
Network. You're going to tell me that's not relevant? Here, Man on a Wire.
Oh, God.
Great New York City story from the 70s that's all about that city, I think.
Is that the fictionalization or the documentary?
The documentary.
Oh, I watched the fictionalization with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Mm-hmm. And even though I knew I was watching fake movie, I still had that feeling. We used to open the window of the Empire State Building and stick our heads out in the theater. I was like, oh.
How far away are we from anything anybody wants to listen to or why they started listening to this show? Noah Baumbach movies, which I don't like, are probably a pretty good version of what living in New York City is right now. I would also say that if you really want to talk about sort of more what it's like for, say, younger folk, for Brooklyn folks, the show Girls is probably not all that far off.
Right.
It's, you know, fanciful to a certain extent. And
it's young folk with trust funds.
Yeah. But, you know, that's what a lot of the city is.
That's true.
It's possibly that's the majority of what the city is.
I would say, again, this is an early 2000s movie. This is sort of my heyday, but Coffee and Cigarettes, the Jim Jarmusch film, which, again, is a lot of short stories, but it all takes place in New York.
And the RZA's in it, so that's good. We have to stop this now.
All right. I just saying, again, I apologize this wasn't in the media splod, but again, you got to put it in the subject line because...
You know what? I'm guessing most of the people who are listening like what we do here, like we talk about, and have gone, oh, yeah, that movie. I should go see that movie. And if that happens to a few people, then I think it's all been worth it. But we are going to move around along. If you want to write in, kind of contact at ifanboy.com. If you wanted to be on a media splode show, put that in the subject line so we can more easily find it. Tell us about the special editions. There are many.
Yes. So currently behind this show on the feed, we're in that pattern of doing pick of the week, special edition, pick of the week, special edition. We've been doing that for about a month. So behind the show, you'll find the media splode, which just came out this couple days ago. We talked about Tenet. We talked about what's the best way to watch streaming shows weekly or binging them. We talked about what we've been watching. Fun episode. A little drunk in it because I had the aforementioned solo hangout before that. Behind that, you can find a special edition show about Justice Society World War II, the latest DC Universe animated film. And then behind that one, you can find a special edition show about Invincible, the first season of the Robert Kirkman story animated on Amazon. So those are the shows you can find directly behind this one on the feed. And they're all a lot of fun.
Coming up just at the end of this month, there's going to be a Talksplode. I have it booked. I've got it ready. I will tell you about it after I record it. And it might come out soon after that, before the end of this month, as promised on time. Then after that, next month in June, you can look forward to a Booksplode about Injustice, Gods Among Us, Year One, the complete collection. That's by Tom Taylor and I think 462 different artists.
Yeah, I have to really get on that.
Yeah,
I think I've read 20 pages of that collection, which is like 420 pages.
Once you get going, you're not going to have a problem.
I know, I keep thinking, oh, well, I should read that, and I just don't do. So those are coming up. We look forward to those. Oh, it's your turn.
Well, sure. You can head over to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our shows and our vast history of comic book writing from all the writers that we've had on the show, on the site for over the years. You can find all the podcasts that we've ever done that are available. That's a little caveat there. That stuff's all there. You can go to facebook.com/ifanboy or at ifanboy on Twitter or at ifanboycomics on Instagram. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. We will do panels, best of the week in panels, when we have time.
Yeah, sometimes life gets in the way. Like, life finds a way. Life also finds a way to get in the way sometimes.
Chaos. You can follow us individually at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram and at J. Flanagan on Instagram. And that's the only social media you'll find us on because it's ruining the world. You can go to youtube.com/ifanboy. You can like and subscribe.
Smash those buttons.
Smash. Damn it. Smash the likes. Hey, guys, what's up? Okay. But like, what if a bunch of overexcited Gen Z people said exactly the same thing at the top of every single video? What about that? Well, they would make millions more than you ever did, Josh. Oh, that's great. That's good. Good for them. This past week, you can see a new comics preview from a long time ago. By the way, Dallas, you should find the episode we did about superheroes in New York City.
Oh, yeah. Go to our YouTube page. Look up Super Cities. I changed the title on the YouTube. Look through our catalog. You'll find we did a show about Marvel Comics locations in New York City. Watch it. Write down the locations. Check them out for yourself. It was fun.
That's fun.
Yeah.
The Emerald City Comic Con 2009 video we did. And the Vault show about books that Ron got us for Christmas, which means that Kane was one of them, I believe.
No.
No, different one.
It was Young Avengers for you.
Okay.
This was during the heyday. It was Young Avengers. Superman Red Sun. No, he bought it for you. Superman Red Sun. And then we just did a random book for Ron because he obviously didn't give himself a present. Also, Emerald City Comic Con, this is Ron Week, by the way, was just Ron by himself. For some reason, neither one of us went.
I was going to say I didn't go to that. 2008 Emerald City Comic Con, maybe my favorite comic book convention experience.
Yeah, I don't know why we didn't go. It was just Ron and Gordon on that one. Weird.
I got very, very sick on the way home from the 2008 Emerald City Comic Con.
No, like that was WonderCon.
Nope. I got
WonderCon,
sick.
WonderCon, you got sick both times? Cause you and I got like deathly ill on the way home from WonderCon.
That was the way from home from WonderCon. I had an event on the plane from Emerald City.
Oh, well, I'm sorry about that. If you like the show and like all this discussion about long, old history and movies and things like that.
And illness.
Write a review or leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, wherever podcasts are sold, wherever they're aggregated. There's all kinds of places you can get them now. Even better than that, tell your friends, your mom, your child, your letter carrier, your vaccine workers, your haircut person. Josh just got a haircut. Did you tell him about the show, Josh?
No, I don't talk to her about that.
Okay.
I can tell you this, though. She's purchased but has not taken delivery on too many donkeys.
Okay. Helps for the I Fanboy Love.
That's exactly the right reaction.
And until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Thank you. Welcome to